opportunity strikes for Joe Biden this week with the retirement of a Supreme Court justice and the fallout from major winter storms, giving him the chance to look proactive on America's crumbling infrastructure. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton, author and freelance journalist. Find us each and every week wherever you find good podcasts at US of Ed, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. Before we get into domestic politics this week, Russia and Ukraine. Not much seems to have changed, Ed, although the US is sending 3,000 troops into Eastern Europe, and there has been a leak that the US is willing to negotiate over missile deployments in Europe if Russia eases back on Ukraine. What's happening?
Well, I think there is some back-channeling stuff going on. All the people on the inside know what's going on the inside, and now they're leaking it a little bit to bring down the tensions and the face-saving that has to go on here. So the U.S. has to do something that doesn't look like they've lost, but they have to give some ground so that Putin can declare some kind of victory. Think of keeping 100,000 troops in position, in the snow, now for 3 weeks. The cost of that would be enormous. So either you invade now or forgive it, because that snow is going to start to melt and you can't invade. You know, by the middle of next month, that's going to be mush, not snow. And invading in the snow was tricky as, what was that guy's name, Hitler?
I was going to say there's been more than one.
What was his name, Napoleon? They had to know that movie.
Back home, Joe Biden has been handed a potential win, or maybe a life preserver, with the way things are going. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer is set to step down from his position on the nation's highest court. Ed, a few people have said Breyer is avoiding the same mistake that Ruth Bader Ginsburg did in, dying at a pretty inopportune time. What do you make of the decision?
I think that decision was made for that reason. He's reading the polls. He thinks the Senate might be lost. And why face that consequence when he can go out healthy and heroic? Now, the back chatter is the Republicans want to make a stink about an affirmative action candidate, choosing a person because they're black. Hey, mate, you chose people because they weren't black. What's wrong with choosing somebody because they are or female? Don't give me that, please.
Yeah, Biden had made this promise early on that obviously he would replace whoever left the court with a new justice that would be a black woman. And presumably they need to be reasonably young as well, so Democrats can get away with many, many years of decisions swinging their way. But I do think they're hitting a little bit hard on the identity politics on this one. I mean, I would just as soon see Biden nominate a black woman and let the decision speak for itself.
He do that, but he made that promise in South Carolina when he was way behind in the polls. And people would bring it up to him if he put up a white woman or a white man or Hispanic or an Asian. I think they wouldn't be too hard on him if he put up an Asian. He has someone to answer to here. He has South Carolina to answer to here, and black women voters across the country. Asian voters, if you put them all in a phone booth, they wouldn't matter too much. So this is good politics because it doesn't hurt on the left, and it's particularly after Floyd, after what's his name in Georgia, and so on. And with Thomas on the court, gee, I'll take a black cigar.
And look, as you say, the Republicans are opposing this one, but I think realistically Biden could have put King Solomon up as a nominee, and you still would have had...
They would have opposed that too.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're not all opposing. McConnell's not opposed to everybody. He just says he has a favorite candidate. He's not telling people to vote against this candidate. They still have a solid majority. He's not going to die on this hill.
Now, we've talked about the failure to pass Biden's signature Building Back Better bill recently, since coming back this year. But one we can't forget about is the earlier bipartisan infrastructure deal, which was signed into law late last year. Biden also signed an executive order establishing an infrastructure implementation task force to meet some of these goals. And results, it would seem, can't come quick enough for America's crumbling infrastructure. Winter storms in the last couple of weeks have really exposed some weak spots with the collapse of the Pittsburgh Bridge during rush hour, injuring 10 people. And there's been huge traffic jams.
Which Biden was going to go over to give his speech.
Mm. Wouldn't that made some headlines?
Wouldn't that have made him news, huh?
Yeah. We've also seen massive traffic jams along various routes along the American East Coast. What's the latest on sort of improving the country's infrastructure?
Well, as I mentioned, the Russian army can't move in the snow and the slush. Neither can an infrastructure program. But a lot of planning can be done. And additional weaknesses in the system can be identified. It takes a long time to mobilize an infrastructure program. You have to measure the bridge, you have to decide on the support, you have to decide the new... Methodologies have changed a lot since 1960 and building bridges and everything else. So the end of it should be a great program, but Biden will be out of the White House before it's finished if he stays 8 years. And then the next president will take credit for it.
Mm. I mean, just mentioning the changes of methodology, obviously this is a field you know a great deal about, Ed, and I think these examples we're talking about here, they kind of remind us of America's great love affair with the automobile. But can roads still be prioritized when we do have this need for a greater focus on public transport?
Both are in this bill. And a lot of the public transport moves have already been taken. For example, Los Angeles is really strengthening its subway system and downplaying the roads. I think LA doesn't want any more roads, just some repairs of existing ones. And the same thing's true in many other big cities. In Wisconsin, I think they're talking about taking down freeways and using other bypass methods. And other cities are doing the same, including Pittsburgh. So I think with climate change, you have to think about new routes as well as new technologies. So I think we're going to see a lot of that coming out now. And the love affair with automobile is true for those who are still buying them. But automobile sales are plummeting. Used car sales are going up because no one wants to buy a car, so they buy a used one. But if the infrastructure can improve, really improve, for public transportation, and the speeds can improve, I think we're going to see fewer cars on the road.
Mm. Well, actually, one they might be pointing fingers towards when we talk about the plummet of automobile sales, inflation. Rental costs are up more than 30% in some American cities, forcing millions of Americans to find new places to live. Now, obviously, inflation has other effects as well, but housing costs make up a third of the U.S. Consumer Price Index. What is the Biden administration doing?
Well, rents are up. That is true. The inflation numbers are based on what it costs to build and replace more than it is the actual rent. So the actual rent of the individual is going to pay does go up because the building costs are going up, not because the landlord wants to raise prices. But the landlord now is faced with the fact that heating oil is up, The pain is up. The same thing's true here. In my current business, I'm out there with a lot of developers and others who can't even get projects started because there's no labor around to start them. And so when you start about talking about repairing buildings, even here in Sydney, you can't get a repairman because the repairman's working on some construction site that the government put in effect several months ago. This is going to be true with this new infrastructure bill. Labor costs are up, which cycles right back into apartment buildings. New apartment building, the more they come online, the more it stabilizes rents. New apartment buildings aren't coming online. And then we have all the other hiccups and backups and so on. Now think about it. For the past 10 years, we've had almost negative inflation. We haven't, you know, let that thing trickle up, trickle up, trickle up, trickle up to reach 5.5%, which is where it might well be. So I think this inflation bubble is going to break. It's going to fall, but it's not going to fall back to 1%. Now, for us oldies, 5% is fine. We're not buying much, and 5% gives us more money in our pockets from our dividends and from our interest in the banks. It's been hard on older people. I've run into some say, zero interest in the bank is hurting me. You know, I got to eat cat food. That interest was actually helpful. So we have a real dilemma here. Not to mention the fact that people are leaving their jobs, putting all the focus on one person in the household bringing in the money. I don't know how this is going to play out because those of us who are urban economists worked with a different deck not that long ago. There was no pandemic in the deck. There was an assumption that the biggest costs were three costs. One was transport, because everything was coming on the ocean and through ships and in containers, which were on the trucks and the like. The second was fuel. And these are related, fuel cost. And liquid natural gas was helping us out. But the more these disasters you have, the less natural gas is around. And the third one was labor. Labor, there's plenty of labor, so they weren't pushing up the price. All three of those top drawer things are in trouble. And the pandemic caused them all. We have actually been working globally on very thin margins in everything. That means we had no backup. We don't have resilient economies. And I hope that this pandemic will start helping us build resilient economies, well-structured and much better put together. The economies are too fragile. I don't have an answer for this one, but I do have several things to say. One, there's a country that I'm living in now that tossed out its industrial base. That isn't smart. A country I used to live in tossed out half of its industrial base. That isn't smart. A country I live in now has run up the cost of education. That isn't smart. The country I used to live in has really made its educational system dysfunctional. That isn't smart. So these unsmart things lead to bad outcomes. We're going to talk about this later, but almost every footy coach I worked with said, the way you practice determines whether you win the game. So don't focus on the game. Focus on the practice. And we've been focusing on the game so much. The short term, we've got about infrastructure, or human infrastructure. Universities that were free when I went to the university produce the human resources to build this magnificent economy. That's bad coaching if you don't keep that up.
It's been a while since we checked in with Vice President Kamala Harris. This week she's been down in Honduras for the inauguration of the country's first female president, former Honduran First Lady Xiomara Castro. Ed, what's the relationship like here?
Well, first of all, a person by the name of Castro always brings a little suspicion to mind. But she's not down there for Honduras. She's down there for Central America and Mexico. The U.S. is trying to find a way in extremely corrupt, financially bankrupt, and poorly led countries to get some infrastructure built there that will produce some products and goods that the rest of the world needs. They're focusing on, clearly, on bananas. They're focusing on coffee. They're focusing on rubber. These are primary products. If they can get those things up, the gangs will go away because they won't be able to sell drugs to poor people. And the Americans seem to be buying their drugs both with marijuana and pharmaceuticals at home. They don't need a supply from the South. So they're trying to kill the drug trade, to be not to be cute about it, and bring about some stability. She's using Honduras as a base.
Mm. And as you mentioned a moment ago, talking football, widely considered the greatest when it comes to one of the greatest of all time when it comes to the sport, quarterback Tom Brady has announced his retirement following the Tampa Bay Buccaneers loss to the Los Angeles Rams last weekend in the lead-up to the American Super Bowl. 22 seasons, a historic 7 Super Bowl titles. Thoughts on this one, Ed?
Well, his wife makes more money than he does and is prettier than he is. And I think she said enough is enough, hubby. I make $250 million a year, and you only make $100 million. I can call the tunes here. She is, what is she, the top model in the world, or one of the top? She has the white, cold. And I think she's a grown up in this family. She's saying, look, husband, lay on top. Don't have to limp to the dinner table. Buy yourself a football team if you want one. And I think this was a smart move because she saw him hit pretty hard this year by these guys who were 150 kilos. And it only takes one of those to end it for good. And he, like most smart men, he listens to a smart woman.
Mm. I will say for both of them, both Tom Brady and his wife, they've had very long careers in careers that tend to be pretty short-lived.
Yes, yes, but they've both diversified.
But that's not the only story in American football this week. A former Dolphins head coach, Brian Flores, who was fired last month, is suing the National Football League and 3 teams specifically, alleging racist hiring practices and discrimination. The league has a bit of a spotty history when it comes to this kind of thing, leading to the establishment of the Rooney Rule in 2003 that states, teams must at least grant interviews, although not necessarily jobs, to minority candidates for coaching and top-level positions. Thoughts, Ed?
Well, there are a couple things. One, this is a cub you're behind. This year, I think most of the owners knew there weren't very many African-American coaches in the pool they wanted to hire. So what they did is they went out and hired executives for the football teams, playing the long game. There might be some African-Americans down below people Flores' age that they could bring in, but they'd start the group from the top. Much of it from actually the United States, not from the bottom kids in the first and second years of universities, new college professors who were African-American at Harvard and other institutions who made a big difference, and they didn't have to say anything. I didn't have to say anything. I was a dean. All of a sudden, there's more candidates who who are African American applying to the university than ever before. They just saw a picture of the dean. And more students applied who later got their PhDs and they're now professors. And this was the Board of Trustees. The owners are the Board of Trustees, and they were short-sighted. They should have done what they're doing now 5 years ago. But what makes this worse is there's an accusation that the owner of the Miami team asked Flores to lose some games. Now, if you do that in boxing and throw a fight, you're struck as a manager for life. Mm. And the boxer can't box anymore. If you do this in the AFL or NRL, you're out. You're gone. Sometimes half the team is gone. This is a much bigger scandal than the race scandal. Because if there are fixed competitions in professional leagues where gambling's involved, whoo, and this guy says he has the goods. Now, the owners will corral around. There are 32 owners. There's going to be 31 owners pretty soon. Nobody wants that stench on them. Now, you can be sure at the end of the season, some teams that haven't won very many games are start playing their second team. You know, when the older players understand that, they don't want to play two more games for nothing. And the same happens in the NRL and everywhere else. But the integrity of the league is really in question now. And the average fan who didn't know anything about this is not focusing on Flores. They're focusing on the integrity of the game. So this is a super big issue. Now, I coached in the National Football League. Have to admit this. And I suspect I'm going to get a letter in the not too distant future, because this is a class action suit. They'll look at the name of every African American coach. And I coached back in the 60s and 70s. I'm sure I will get a letter asking if I want to be a member of this class action. Mm. And I'm going to say yes.
Mm. Well, there we have it.
Now, I will not have to do anything. Like if you get one from Coca-Cola or whatever, I won't have to testify. They might ask what my experiences were, which were all pretty good. But when the settlement comes and I get that 30 or 40,000, you know, you and I'll have a couple of beers.
Sounds like a plan to me, mate. Yeah, sounds like a plan. Mm.
Yeah, it's too bad integrity can be purchased. But
yeah.
My 40,000, I don't think is a low price.
Donald Trump, you knew it was coming. Trump this week, amidst investigations into his actions on January 6th, with documents that we now know were torn up and sticky taped back together, Trump outright released a statement saying unequivocally that he called on Pence to overturn the results of 2020's free and fair election to reinstate him as president, dictator, over imaginary claims of electoral fraud, with the proof that Democrats are now trying to make sure there's no confusion over vice presidential powers in these circumstances. Look, we already knew this, but really, he thought it wise to state it outright on his own stationery this week.
Yeah, this is like the football thing. You know, writing it down to tank the games. He wrote it down. We all knew this, but he wrote it down. Mm. But the other thing he said that was alarming, even to the Republicans, if he's reelected, he will give clemency or pardon all those people who go to jail. That's like a gangster saying, if you keep me out of jail, you know, I will make sure that you judges, et cetera, are taken care of. That is another crime.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crime to promise to a witness or anyone involved in an incident, clemency or anything, and protection. So he's just committed another crime. Where's this guy's head?
Reminds me of one of the rallies at one point where he, what do you tell his supporters? Rough up that protester. I'll pay your legal bills if you get in any trouble. Yeah.
Which is a crime.
Yep. I mean, this to me proves something I've been saying all along, which is, you know, and I've been saying this since Trump, you know, before Trump was elected in 2016. He's just not that smart. He's
not that smart.
He's not a bad showman. He tapped into something in the American consciousness that that almost no one else, no politician, fully appreciated. But he's simply not that bright.
No, thank God. If he has something more going for him, we might be saying Yahoo presumptum. Sir Trump.
Yeah, I guess that's what we worry about. The next one's actually going to be Trump, but smarter. Yeah. Ed and I will be back next week to talk all the latest goings-on in the land of the free and the home of the brave. Make sure to subscribe wherever you find the podcast so you don't miss a thing. And check us out on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed.